Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on the Commons with me today, I'm really pleased, thrilled, and very happy to have an old friend with me. Veli Dietrich Hall is in the studio right across the board from me, and online with us is Ron Brown, and let me tell you what everybody's going to be talking about. Veli is a partnership specialist, and her focus is on the Asians in the region to try and bring people to this, you know, to get counted and be part of the census so they're not excluded. And Ron Brown is the coordinator for not one, not two, but three whole states. And you got a big job there, Ron.
Well, it keeps me traveling quite a bit, but I enjoy it, and it's a great job working for the Bureau.
You like it. Let's talk a little bit about the census. What is the census? Why do we take it?
Well, the census is something that is mandated by the Constitution that every 10 years, we do a count in America of everyone in America. And when we say everyone, we mean everyone, those who are legal, illegal, documented, undocumented, because they are using services within the community that we want to be able to continue to support through funding. So we count everyone in America to determine how that will impact our communities and how the population has changed across America.
Now you said this is mandated by the Constitution?
Yes.
And are the questions mandated by the Constitution as well?
Well, the questions have been developed by Congress, and working with the Office of Management and Budget, there were questions that were developed over 2 years ago. Work goes into planning for every decennial at least 2 to 3 years before the actual count. And they are presented to Congress to determine what questions will be asked on the questionnaire.
So you're looking basically on the short form. You're looking for who's who, where, how many people.
Yes, we want to know how many people are living in the particular household. We also ask questions about whether they have a mortgage or they rent the particular place they're living in. We ask question about race. What race are they, or are they of multiple race? And we also ask a question about ethnic origin, Hispanic, Latino, ethnic origin.
And why is that important?
Again, to look at the changing demographics of the country, to see how the population is changing, to look at the ethnic backgrounds of various individuals within the country or the population as a whole. We have to present the numbers to President Obama by December 31st of 2010 as to how the population has changed in America.
And what about representation? Does that affect, does this have anything to do with how many representatives, congressmen you get out of your state? Is that part of it?
Well, thank you for bringing that up. That is one of the points that this count actually does address. Each state is allocated congressional seats based on their population headcount. So that will determine who our decision makers are in Congress. For example, after the 2000 decennial, because of their population numbers going down, the state of Utah lost an opportunity for an additional seat in Congress. But North Carolina, because of a significant increase in their population, gained the opportunity for an additional seat in Congress. So it does impact congressional representation. It impacts legislative redistricting around the country, whether it's in states, local communities. They redraw district lines based on population changes, the population headcount. But one of the biggest things that the headcount really impacts is that the federal government redistributes over $400 billion annually back into communities, again, to support services, whether they're educational services, school programs, books, teachers' salaries, whether they're emergency services and hospitals. whether it's basic infrastructure, roadways, highways, sewage systems, water lines, all of that is supported by these dollars that are redistributed back into the community. So you're talking about $4 billion over a 10-year period of time that is impacted by the headcount.
So $4 billion annually.
No, $400 billion annually.
400.
$400 billion annually, $4 trillion over a 10-year period of time.
Wow. And this is all your money that's been sort of run through, processed through the federal government, and it's coming back to you based on your needs, right?
Yes, it is taxpayer money, and again, based on the needs of the community, but based on the headcount, counting people in the community.
Veli, what about your role in this, in the census?
Well, as you know, here in Northern Virginia, SHU, the growing population, especially the Asian Americans, they grow 51% growth rate as fast as the Hispanic community. And everywhere you go, wherever you go here, you cannot miss any Asians or any minority groups in Northern Virginia.
Right.
And I just want to make sure that everybody understood the importance, what it is for them. What do they get out of being counted? Because most Asian populations, they came to this United States because they want to have two or three jobs to afford a good education for their children, so they don't have the time to fill out the application forms. And we want to tell them how important it is for them, for their children. It's only a very short question, 10 questions, it's less than 10 minutes.
Are you running into any opposition, any resistance from the Asian community to participate in this?
No, I don't have. As a matter of fact, they're more even motivated. Last night, for example, I give a complete count committee training. They have already proposals on what to do to reach out to the community. And they are so motivated because they're finally feel that they are important enough to be counted.
So you're making them feel like this is, you know, they're important and we need to know who they are.
It's not just importance, it's really what they get out of this, which few of the Asians in the past understood it fully. When you first ask them, they would say, well, you know, because they want to count how many people can vote. It's not that. So we're out there on the streets and educating my fellow Asians about the importance of census count.
Is this the first time, Ron, you may be able to jump in? I don't know if you've done this before, or is this your first time, Ron?
No, this is my second decennial. I worked on the program in 2000.
Was there quite as much outreach in 2000, or does this seem to be a little more than usual?
I think it's a little bit more than usual for a number of reasons. One, we look at the current economy. We look at what's happening in the country, recognizing that with job loss, foreclosure of homes, communities, local governments, budgets being reduced, that there's a great impact in terms of how people are being affected by it. And we want to be able to share with them how this $400 billion annually can help to offset some of those negative things that are going on in the community. Another reason why it's a little bit different and it's a little bit more impactful is because of the president's stimulus budget. He has allowed us in the Census Bureau to be able to hire more people this time around to help get the message out, to help develop partnerships so that we can again let people know how it impacts them personally, how important it is for our communities, and how we need to do as much as we can to count more people than we did in 2000 so that we can have more dollars coming back into the community. So it is a bit different this decennial.
So you keep talking about having more dollars come back into the community. Is that the overarching reason for the census this year?
Well, I think it just plays a part of the pie as we look at it because, again, with the negative things that are going on in the communities, here's an avenue for people to, one, be able to get jobs, because we will be hiring. As we do this entire decennial program, we will need to have hired 1.4 million people across the country, which means we will have to have 3.8 million applicants for those jobs. So as people have been experiencing unemployment, here's an opportunity for them to be gainfully employed by becoming applicants, taking the test, and potentially being Census Bureau employees. But also looking at those dollars, and that our congressional leaders are making decisions on how much money comes back into our community, this is an opportunity again to determine how many congressional seats each state will have based on the headcount. So there are a number of factors that are important to us counting everybody in the country. And bottom line, in our communities, make sure there is no more erosion of services, that there are funding to support those services that we need in our community, whether they're community-based nonprofit organizations that are reaching out into the communities, whether they're hospitals, emergency rooms that are there, whether it's school systems that have public or bus transportation to be able to get our kids to school. Those are important factors that are impacting our communities.
Hiring, the job market, how long is it going to last? I mean, I think the end of the census is December 31, 2010, right?
Well, that's when we will have the numbers in terms of having people either mail back their census forms or sending a team out into the community to knock on doors for non-response follow-up of those homes that have not returned their form. But yes, the majority of the staff will be around up until that period of time. And at that point, the Bureau will determine how much longer people will be employed, who they need to go on further, and they'll make that determination. But we're going to have part-time and full-time positions that we're looking to fill.
So full-time would continue on beyond December 31, 2010?
No, not really. Again, that's a decision that the Census Bureau, along with the Department of Commerce, would have to make, and they've made no determination yet. Our jobs are expected to last up to or not exceed September 30th, 2010.
So September 30th, 2010, it's quite possible that we're going to have a large influx of unemployed. The unemployment rate's going to go right back up again, right?
Well, we're not sure, because they can make a decision. The president can do another stimulus budget to keep the jobs in place and hire more people. That's up in the air. We don't know that. That's a decision that the president, Congress, and others will be making between now and then.
Veli, how many Asians do you have working with you on the census? I mean, your job is to outreach the Asian community, and we have Filipinas, Koreans, Chinese, Laos.
Are you talking about partners?
I'm talking about, are they all partners? Do they come under the term of partners?
Well, we have several partners, mostly among the partners that I have. Most of them are really Asians, Koreans, Thais, Vietnamese, Filipinos. I have also Cambodians. I have, in terms of partners with the census, these are the civic organizations. Some of them, civic organizations, companies, Chamber of Commerce, media, who partnered with us.
And they actually are getting paid for...
No, they don't.
So they're not part of the stimulus plan?
No, they're not.
So they're doing...
They're helping us out. They agreed. As I said earlier, they're very motivated to reach out to the Asian community. They partnered with us and committed to reach out, help us reach out, because they are the trusted voices of the community. So we choose partners where they can help us conduct outreach to hard-to-reach communities, such as community that experience poverty, Asians who have challenges in terms of their languages, also communities that, you know, they shy away, usually they shy away from filling out forms. These are the people that we partnered, and basically some strategic locations here in Northern Virginia, which I have targeted.
So you're out there talking to these people and asking them to become partners.
Yes.
Are they in turn responsible for hiring people? What happens? Let's talk about what happens when the census actually comes out. How is that going to work? You've been through this before.
Well, generally what happens is mid-March of 2010, we will mail census forms to every home in America, asking people to fill out the census forms. In 2000, 72% of the homes that received census forms in Virginia actually mailed them back to us.
Just 72%?
72%, yes, and that was one of the highest rates around the country.
Really?
But we recognize that there were homes that did not return their forms. So we will hire staff to actually go around knocking on doors, and we call them enumerators, to help people fill out the census form or see if they need a replacement form to be able to get their form back in. But as Veli was saying, part of our initiative is to develop partnerships with various entities within the community, whether it is local government, whether it's educators, whether it's media, nonprofit organizations, community-based organizations, to help us get the word out, to help us motivate people to return their form. And in that process, as we are hiring people, we're hiring from the community. We're trying to hire people who are family members of some of the individuals who will be receiving the forms, their neighbors, their friends, those familiar faces in the community that they know, so that they will be able to see that we, again, take this very serious, that this information is going to be confidential and private. We do not share it with anyone outside of the Census Bureau. We collect no Social Security numbers on these forms. And we're trying to get, again, as Veli said, those trusted voices, faces in the community to help us present the message of how important the 2010 census is. So again, around April 1st, which is Census Day, and it's not April Fool's Day because this is not a joke for us. We're very serious about this. We will begin to see the response rate of those who have actually mailed back their form. And then we're going to be sending a team out there to help us work with homes to get the information back in.
What about people who may be out of the country at the time? What about the homeless? Are they going to be counted?
Yes, we will be doing a major initiative during the last week of March in 2010 to count the homeless and the new, what we call, homelessness. Those people who have gone through foreclosures and have lost their homes, those who have been displaced and cannot go back to their homes due to weather conditions like Hurricane Katrina. A lot of people have not been able to get back to their homes in Louisiana and other places. We're going to be working with community-based organizations to count the homeless, where they are, at soup kitchens, mobile food vans, wherever we can find them. Working with these agencies, we are going to count them. We're going to count everyone, and we're going to do everything we can to count everyone. So that's why we need to work with the agencies. That's why we need to work with familiar faces in the community who actually know where these populations are that we can reach out to and make sure they are counted.
WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and we are talking about the 2010 census that's coming up. We have Veli Dietrich Hall in the studio with me and Ron Brown, who's on the phone and I believe in sunny Richmond, enjoying the sunshine while we're covered with clouds and rain up here. But and we're talking about the census. This is something quite huge, actually, isn't it?
It is the largest peacetime mobilization of staff to count everyone in America. It happens every 10 years. It has been going on since 1790 when Thomas Jefferson was asked to coordinate the first census. And then even with everyone they counted in 1790, which was 3.9 million people, George Washington vetoed that information as president because he thought there was an undercount. So, yes, this is a very big initiative for the country.
He thought there was an undercount. What happened then? Did he retake the census?
Well, I don't know exactly what happened, but when they only use U.S. Marshals walking the country and doing horseback, yeah, we can understand why there may have been an undercount then.
You know what? With the current situation that the post office horseback might be a good thing to do. My mail gets misdelivered every day. What, you know, you talk about foreclosures, and I'm sure that what you've been doing is collecting addresses, right?
We work with not only local government for a listing of census addresses. We just completed a major initiative this past spring called Address Canvassing. We have received listings not only from 2000, but we also received listings from the United States Postal Service and from local government. And we send staff out to check those addresses that we have received, and we call that phase, again, address canvassing. We successfully completed it a lot quicker than we anticipated to make sure we had correct information from those other sources so that when we mail out the census form in March, we're mailing it to correct addresses.
Actually, I saw one of those counters on my street. I was leaving the house one day, and there's this guy standing there at my neighbor's house looking up and down and taking notes. And I said, excuse me, what are you doing? And he says, I'm from the Census Bureau. I said, oh, okay. So I know they're out there doing that. They're doing their jobs. One thing, the census, when you've got the information, that goes to the president. What agency within the government actually handles the census?
It is the U.S. Census Bureau, and they report in, or we report into, the Department of Commerce. And we provide the numbers to the Secretary of Commerce, who in turn provides it to the President of the United States. And that's the organization we are under. And who we work for.
So you're part of the Commerce Department.
Yes, we are.
In essence, has it always been part of the Commerce Department? Is that part of the constitutional requirement?
As I understand, it has changed in the past from various other departments. I can't be exactly sure of which ones, but it has not always been under the Department of Commerce.
It hasn't.
No, it has not.
No. Do you know, I never did look up the look it up in the Constitution, but do you know offhand what the original constitutional requirement was for the census?
No, I don't have all of that information in front of me, but I know it was a mandate that every 10 years we count everyone in America.
Okay, so it's counting everyone. So we're looking for actual bodies. That's what we want, right?
Yes, it is.
Now, that's the one census that everybody fills out.
Yes.
And there's another one.
What it is, it's called the American Community Survey. And it replaces the long-form survey we used to do every 10 years along with the short-form. And that was unveiled in 2005 to replace the long form we have done in previous decennials. We do that on a monthly basis as a sample survey that is done of 250,000 households around the country. And again, it replaces the long form to provide more of the economical data that a lot of people and organizations look for, things like how long does it take you to travel from home to work, how many bathrooms do you have in your home, how long have you lived in the area that you currently reside in. One, to look at migration patterns, one, to look at, again, travel back and forth to work using the infrastructure, the highways. Another one to look at the infrastructure in terms of sewer lines, water lines going into subdivisions, housing developments. So that provides more in-depth data. And people were always questioning, was there any way to get that data much more currently than having to wait every 10 years? So that's why there was the introduction of the American Community Survey. And during the decennial, people may receive both. They may receive the short form survey for the decennial, and they may receive the American Community Survey. And we're asking them to fill out both.
Okay, let me understand this. Let me just make sure that I've got this straight. The American Community Survey, which replaces the long form?
Yes, that we did every 10 years. Now we're doing that annually. Every month we're sampling households across America.
Okay, every month you're sending out, what, 250,000 annually or monthly?
Monthly. That goes monthly. Out monthly, yes.
Okay. And you said that you're looking at, I've got a copy of that, and it's available online on U.S. Was it U.S.Census.gov?
Yes.
Census.gov?
www.census.gov.
And you can pull that up, and there are a number of questions. Who writes these questions? How do you determine what the questions are? How often are they revisited?
Again, those questions were presented to our Congress to make a determination decision about what questions they were going to be asked. The Bureau, working with other agencies like Office of Management and Budget, helped to determine what those questions are going to be. And they again present them to Congress generally 2 years ahead of when the decennial or surveys are being done.
How do you determine who gets them?
Well, again, with the survey we are doing for 2010, everyone receives it. And the American Community
Survey... No, I'm talking about the American Community Service.
The American Community Survey is a random sampling of households across America.
So what, computer-generated samples, or... So you just throw the dice, or... Roll the dice, you've got Shu on there and she gets it, or?
Well, I think there is some involvement with computers to make that determination about that random sampling, but I don't know all the specifics.
You don't know all the specifics. As I said, I pulled it out. I do have a copy of it. And, Ron, you may not know this, but my regular listeners do know this, and so does Valley. But this show has to do mostly with homeowner associations, property rights vis-a-vis your homeowners association. And so I was particularly interested when I pulled down the, in preparing for today's show, I printed a copy of the American Community Survey, and I noticed that there were about 2 3/4 pages on housing. And it's interesting because you said you were looking at things like people who use highways, people who use sewer lines, you know, the infrastructure and so on. Why is this important?
It helps local communities, it helps individuals who are building homes to understand what their needs are, what the needs are in terms of water lines going into various communities and also sewer lines, what their needs are in terms of roadways going into various communities for the traffic patterns, people being able to get in and out. It also helps local businesses be able to determine where they might want to place a business, whether it's a Target or Walmart, or stores like that, that a community can support those types of businesses. So it impacts a number of different decisions that are made from local government, from school systems, from businesses, even from emergency services to help them identify how they need to support communities and individuals living within those communities.
When you talk about services, things like schools and emergency services and police and so on, shouldn't the local municipal government that provides these services know about these communities? I mean, after all, except for Houston, I think just about every region, every place has zoning departments, and they pretty much know who's there and what's what and how many houses and all of the rest of the wonderful stuff.
But they're also talking about new construction that may occur. They're also working closely with the Bureau to see how population patterns, migration changes are occurring so that they can look at future needs, future goals, future activities. So it's an ongoing process, and yes, it is local government working with local constituents, working with the Census Bureau, and looking at population change, looking at projections, looking at estimates, looking at all of that information to again determine how they're going to address the needs and the growth of their particular community.
I noticed that on these questions, and I'm going to stick with the housing for right now because that is the area that I'm most interested in. But in the housing, there's one question on whether or not the unit you live in is in a condominium. That seems to be the only reference to a growing trend in this country where it's a policy change, it's very quiet, it's more or less under the radar, but it's kind of taken over. And that is that most people now, or a sizable chunk of the American population, lives in mandatory membership homeowner associations. And they're mandated by local municipal governments. And we don't have accurate stats on that. We don't know. The only statistics that are available are, coincidentally, not from the government, but from the industry that makes its money off of these associations.
Okay, and I fully understand what you're saying, and that's generally, that's not an area that the Bureau gets involved in, as you indicated. It's something that occurs within local government in terms of how they establish their guidelines, how they establish the rules and the regulations for housing within their locality. We just present to them the aggregate numbers of how populations are changing, and then they take those numbers and determine how they're going to use them and in what way that it will impact the community, and you greatly address that in terms of it is the local municipalities that are doing that type of work, and it's not the Census Bureau.
Okay, and here's where I think the Census Bureau needs to get this information, because it is part of the American scene. It is a policy change that's happening. It's happening across the country. Right now, the stats that we have are that 60 million Americans live in some 300,000 mandatory associations. And a lot of these associations provide their own infrastructure, the streets, the roads, all of that are privately owned. Because I didn't get you on the phone before I started the show, but I have a standard start beginning to the show, and I usually start with "You are now leaving the American zone." Because all of a sudden, once you cross over into this private development, the Constitution goes bye-bye. You know, your tax dollars go bye-bye because you have to pay separately for your roads and your streets. A lot of the sewer stuff is there. The police don't want to get involved because it's private property. Yet the data that you're collecting and the information that you're collecting and distributing is not, in my opinion, accurately representing what's going on out there.
Well, again, we're not the ones to determine whether the roads are going to be private and how the funds will be used. We're just presenting the aggregate numbers about what population exists within that area as they have returned their census form and as we have done the count. We share those aggregate numbers with local government, and as you indicated, they're the decision makers in terms of what happens in the community with fees, with costs of roadways, who owns them, who maintains them. That's not an area that the Census Bureau gets involved in.
You get involved in lot size. You get involved in whether there's an agricultural concern on the property, whether there's a business like daycare. Quite often you have daycare facilities within these private communities. you want the age of the development or the house. You want the cost of the house. You want when it was built, when it was purchased, whether you've got hot and cold running water. You want to know how much the condo fee is, if there is a condo, but not if there's an HOA or a cooperative. You want to know the cost of utilities, the taxes that you pay, and all of this. And I can see where all of this can come together and give you a big picture. But what I'm saying is there's a huge chunk that's missing out of this.
Well, I'm sure as people are listening to your radio station and as we convey back to the Bureau that, there, as you indicated, that there is pieces that are missing for the local community. But again, it's going to be up to the local community to help provide and present those pieces, to the population. We again collect the numbers so we can prepare the population changes and how things impact the population in various communities and again give the aggregate numbers out. And the local communities and local homeowners associations with regards to what they're being impacted by has to be dealt on a local level. Those are not decisions that the Bureau makes. We put out the aggregate numbers for them.
The Bureau is using a form that was designed by Congress?
Again, this information has been presented to Congress, and congressional representatives make a decision along with the help of other federal agencies to determine what questions will be asked, how we do this census, what our operation will be like, and they give us approval because they approve our budget. So, yes, they're the ones who make the decisions about how we're going to proceed with doing a decennial.
Is there anything in this stimulus job plan thing that's going on right now to maybe look at exactly what needs to be collected? Because I still think that this is not presenting an accurate picture.
Not to my knowledge. Again, the funds we have received from the stimulus budget on the partnership program is to hire people. We're to have jobs available for people, which is what we have actually done. From my knowledge, it has nothing to do with those questions and decisions that need to be made or need to be changed. The President, through this particular budget with the U.S. Census Bureau, provided it for jobs to hire people who were unemployed.
Vele, you said earlier that the Asian community quite often feels like they're, you know, they're shy and they pull away and they don't quite often participate. One of the problems we have found with homeowner associations is, frankly, quite often it's the minorities and the people who are least able to protect themselves who tend to get targeted the most in associations for some of the horror issues and stories that come about. They're usually afraid. They think that they're going to be deported. They think that, gee whiz, if they get a letter from the association telling them that they've got a dusty mailbox, that they've broken the law, and that they're going to be sent back to Cambodia or Mexico or Laos or wherever. Have you run into any of that? And how do you think that this would help the minority population if they were to understand what they were getting into?
Well, that's exactly the initiative that we have, to reach out to the trusted voices in the community to help them explain, to help us explain to them that the...
Right. You're explaining to them what they need to do, but is there some form, some place, somewhere that you want to hear from them? A trusted voice that they can come to and say, look, this is what I'm going through here. You know, it's got to be a two-way. You know, you're talking about talking to them and letting them know that it's important for them to answer these questions. Have you got anything?
Yes, we do.
You do?
We have a complete count committee, which like one partner, one civic nonprofit organization or a civic association composed of Asian communities or any ethnic groups, they form a committee. It's called a complete count committee, represented by diverse representations of their community. During our meeting or our training, they give us feedback on what the community is feeling about this 2010 census.
Just about the 2010 census, not about life in America.
Well, life in America, yeah, they share. And I fully understand them because I went through what they're going through. And what we assure them that, like, say, that they might be afraid, that they might be deported, that this, the information that's been gathered from the questionnaire, from the result, is protected by law. It is protected by Title 13 of the U.S. Code.
You're talking specifically about the questions that are on the census form, right?
Correct, but you were saying that they might be discovered. I was just listening to the question earlier that they are scared that they might be deported, if they will be discovered. So I'm trying to connect that with the census questionnaire.
Sorry. Okay.
So it's to let them know that it's protected, all the answers that's given to the questions that's been asked, you know, the questionnaires that they receive, that's protected by law. It is completely confidential. It is secured because it's protected by Title 13 of the U.S. Code.
Okay.
Even the president cannot even get that information. We kept that information for 72 years from the day that's being collected.
Who keeps it?
The census keeps it for 72 years.
So, Ron, you sit on it, right?
Yeah.
For three states that you're responsible for. You got it in a box and you're not going to budge.
I have them all stored in my garage right now.
And where do you live?
In Richmond, sunny Richmond.
What's not quite so funny is that I've been hearing from people that when they get this long form, okay, before we go into that, the long form's only been around since 2005?
No, the long form used to be the long form that was sent out every 10 years.
I'm sorry, the American Community Survey.
The American Community Survey was unveiled in 2005, yes.
And that's when you started sending it out?
Yes.
2005. I've heard from people that when they get the survey, there is the threat of a $5,000 fine for not responding to the survey. We talked about this offline. I told you I was going to ask you about it, so I'm not blindsiding you.
No, you're not. And as you indicated, that is in, I think you found that information related to being in the Constitution about fines. But we
no, not the Constitution.
Okay.
Not the Constitution, in the code.
Okay, in the codes, you found that there was a fine associated with people not filling out the census form. To my knowledge, and even speaking with coworkers, the Census Bureau has never enforced any fines or anything related to penalties associated with people not filling out the form. We want everyone to fill out the form. We encourage them to fill out the form, and if there's anything that would keep them from doing that, we try to work with them to make sure they fill out the form, because we are looking to count everyone in America. So to my knowledge and to my coworkers' knowledge, that is not something that has been enforced by the Bureau.
It may not be enforced, but it's kind of like homeowners associations. I'm sorry, I keep going back to that, but kind of like homeowners associations, they have the power to fine and foreclose to collect that fine, and maybe an association will tell you that they haven't done it, but the fact that they can do it and they let you know they can do it, is a significant tool there.
But unlike the Homeowners Association, which you just indicated, that they let you know that they can do it, that's not part of the message of the U.S. Census Bureau in terms of promoting and educating people about filling out the census form.
Actually, it is.
We don't use that. No, we don't use that as an educational piece, as a promotional piece, because that's a sledgehammer approach. We're working with people. We're encouraging them to fill out the form. So I know in messages that Valley gives, messages that the team I work with give, we do not include that in our messages. We do not use that.
People have been getting letters, which is how I found out about it. And, you know, here's what it says, and this is from the census website. says the American Community Survey is conducted under the authority of Title 13 United States Code, and it goes through all the sections, etc. Persons who do not respond shall be fined not more than $100. In effect, okay, and then there was an amendment. So for 2005, 6, 7, and 8, I guess the fine was $100. But that was then changed. And it says the census takers were fined, if not more than $100, to no more than $5,000. So this year, that fine was changed from $100 to $5,000.
But as you've indicated, yes, that is written in the code, but whether it is being enforced, and to my knowledge, that has never been employed by the Census Bureau. So yes, it may be there, but again, whether it is actually used to encourage people or to force people to fill out the census form, to my knowledge, through the Bureau or my coworkers, we have never done that.
Well, I found out about it because people said they got a letter, a cover letter, with the Census Bureau saying if you do not return it, and if you falsify the information, you will be fined $5,000.
I think what we're doing, as any organization does, is just sharing with people information, educating people about what exists, but we have never, from what I understand, have enforced anything like that. I don't think we're looking to do that. So it's like when you get a new product at home, you open it up and read the manufacturer's instructions and their warranty, and they'll tell you, if you do this, this is what could happen. If you do this, this is what will happen. Again, it's just providing information that is there, but we have not enforced that particular code, to my knowledge.
From what I've been gathering, Ron, and I don't know, Valley and Ron, you may be able to take this back to the higher-ups. There's a certain sentiment of resentment out there about that.
Okay.
When you get this and it says we will fine you $5,000 if you don't respond, and that's not exactly what I expect the government, who's supposed to be protecting us, to do.
Okay, and I know Veli and I will be happy to share that information with the people we report to.
Thank you. We have a few minutes. Veli, you want to say anything, encourage people, anything that we haven't covered?
Well, by March, as Ron has mentioned earlier, when we will be sending out the questionnaires, if they do not receive their questionnaires, we have sites. It's called Big Counted Sites, where we have some people who can also help out, guide, and do some translations. Right now, we have 8 languages for the questionnaires available during March time frame that we'll be sending out. And we'll be sending out, we have language translators. We have a hotline that people can call if they need some translators.
And this is for the 2010 census?
Census, correct.
What about 2012, when you get the American Community Survey with a threat for $5,000 fine for not answering? Do you have hotlines there with translators?
We always have what we call telephone assistance available through the Census Bureau if people need help filling out their census form. And the Bureau is around 9 years, even between decennials, doing other surveys, and again, always provide assistance for what people may need. So they just need to call the U.S. Census Bureau for whatever type of assistance that they need, and the Bureau will be happy to help.
You said they do other surveys. What other surveys are there?
They do things like current population surveys. They do hospital insurance surveys. They do census in the school surveys. So they're doing a lot of different things. They do an economic survey to track what is happening with businesses, manufacturers. So they do quite a host of surveys.
So this is something that's ongoing all the time and not just once every 10 years or... You know, other than the community thing.
Yes, the U.S. Census Bureau is probably the premier data collection organization, I would say, around the world in terms of pulling together data and information on a number of different areas. And again, they're around in between the 10-year survey decennial that we do. So they're always collecting data to be able to share with individuals.
Is there anything that you want to add, Ron, that I have missed?
Again, we'd just like to share with your audience that it's important for them to fill out the 2010 census questionnaire when they receive it, because again, it does impact over $400 billion annually that comes back into our communities. It is safe. We do not share any of their personal information with anyone outside of the Bureau. We have taken an oath as employees not to do that. If we violate that oath, or we run the risk of spending 5 years in jail or having to pay a $250,000 fine or both. And we take that oath very serious. And it's not just while we are employed by the Bureau. That is a lifetime oath. And it is easy. 10 questions in 10 minutes. First time in the history of the census that we're only using a short form. And we'd like everybody to understand we need to help communicating this in their communities, getting people to fill out this questionnaire when it starts arriving in March of next year. And I want to thank you for all of the information you have shared with us, the subjects you have brought up that we will indeed share with the Bureau, and we appreciate you helping us get the message out.
Well, I really appreciate you guys taking the time off to come in. This is the second time we've tried to do this, and I appreciate you being available two times to do the show and to help work with us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. I'm going to send some of this sun from Richmond up to Northern Virginia.
Oh, Ron, I'll love you forever. I'll help you sit on that box in your garage.
Okay.
And keep. Veli, last word?
Thank you so much, Sho. I hope we'll have a chance again when we have some big events, since you are a partner with the census. I'm looking forward to really working more and doing some outreach to the community, not just to the Asian community, but to the hard-to-count communities as well.
What is the hard-to-count community?
Hard-to-count communities, there are some people who are in poverty. There are people who are the black communities, the male especially, from 18 to 32 years old. That is historically, they don't like filling out questionnaires. And there are some Asian communities which they don't like reaching out because of the language proficiencies.
What about the Hispanic communities?
Hispanic
and what about
communities,
the smaller communities that are not...
The Middle East communities as well. And that's why I am really so happy that we have this medium to reach out, because you are the trusted community in your community to issue.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I promise you that we will tie in homeowner association issues wherever we find a chance to do so. Again, Ron, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Veli, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to all of you for taking the time to be with us today. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet. The writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.